Hello, my name is Junie, and welcome to the Theta Game Podcast. I'm not a financial advisor, and nothing I say is financial advice. I'm just a normal retail trader, just like you. I'm not certified or a graduate of finance, just a trader that started on Wall Street Bets years ago. I've lost a lot of money and made all of it back and more after finding a system that worked for me. You can view all my trades for free at thetagang.com/Junie, no signup required, and email me any questions that I'll answer on the podcast at junie@thetagang.com. Lastly, I stream on Twitch every weekday at least an hour at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Come hang out, ask me questions, vent, or just chill. It's a positive environment, and everyone is welcome at twitch.tv/realthetagang. I've been using the TastyTrade trading platform since I started my ThetaGang journey 5 years ago, and it feels surreal that I've partnered with TastyTrade so I can focus on bringing you guys and girls the content. If you'd like to sign up and use TastyTrade for your trading journey, you can use my link in the show description or use the ThetaGang referral code, that's one word, all caps, when signing up. I use TastyTrade every Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, where I chat and trade with viewers live every morning. Go again to twitch.tv/realthetagang if you're interested, join the chatter and morning hangout. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy today's episode. Alrighty, we're going to start off by first recognizing that the volume levels of this episode are going to be way different than a lot of previous episodes, and that's because Audacity came out with this 3.6 update. Audacity is the software that I use to record these podcasts, and it looks really nice, and it kind of inspired me to really get in with nitty-gritty and kind of fix around my volume settings. So if this episode kind of took you by surprise and my voice scared you, I'm very sorry, but this should be the new norm going forward, at least for a little while. And yeah, just very happy that I'm getting this dialed in. It's pretty hard to get volume correct if you're not an audio person, which I'm not. But hopefully it sounds better, and yeah, sorry if I scared you. All right, a little bit of a market update to start us off. Today's July 19th, it's a Friday. The market is pretty red. This week in general has been red for a lot of stocks. We've seen a lot of rotation from bigger companies into smaller companies, but we're starting to see red in smaller companies as well. So we're starting to see a more general theme of red, and that'll kind of go into today's episode. I feel like today's episode is just going to be as good or even better than the last one. These next few episodes are going to be like really, really good. I feel it. But anyway, red market. The red market means pretty good things for my main portfolio as well as my 5K portfolio, because as you guys might have known, because I've mentioned it on previous episodes, I've always been beating SPY, but I've been lagging QQQ. So SPY being more like, you know, the bigger companies that don't have to do with tech mixed with a little bit of tech, and QQQ being the ETF or exchange traded fund that has more tech in it, it's more tech focused. I've been lagging behind tech, but I've been beating SPY. I've been lagging behind QQQ, but beating SPY. Now, year to date, on my 5K account, it's up 34%. It's now at $8,039.84. $8,039.84. I always have trouble with saying the thousands. I don't know what it is, but it's up 34%. Of course, this account is smaller, so you know stakes are much lower. I don't really see this like 34% year to date as like a big deal. I am kind of proud that the drawdown on this account isn't as volatile as nearly as the way up either, because I feel like the trend line, and I show this all for free, by the way, on twitch.tv/realthetagang. You don't even need to say hi. You can just like pop in and you'll see my 5K account, where it's at and all my trades. Shameless plug there. But the account that I'm more proud of right now is my my main account. So the account that is my main started out with 300K this year, and I'm up 54.3K on it right now. And so if I do 54.3 divided by 300, I'm at 18.1% year to date. So that's pretty good, you know. If I look at SPY at Google.com, SPY stock. SPY year to date right now is 16.17. So I'm beating that by 2%. So that feels kind of cool. But I've always been lagging behind QQQ. I had a good start earlier this year where I was ahead, but then QQQ kind of blew me out of the water, beating me by a few percentage points. But year to date now, QQQ is up 18.07. So I'm beating QQQ by 0.03%, and that feels really cool. It means that despite there being a very large drawdown, my position sizing and my trading strategy lets me sort of catch up to the ETF. So whatever I'm doing right now, aka when I detect weakness, I take maybe some winners off the table, or you know, as the market was going up, I felt like, you know, putting best loser wins into practice, I was able to gain a lot of profit, which I gave back, but nonetheless gave me a good buffer so that I'm just back at where I started despite the market tanking really heavily the last few days or last few weeks. Something top of mind right now for me is that now that I'm firmly in a position that I'm beating SPY and beating QQQ and the market is going down, I do want to take advantage of any sort of rally up. And I don't want to get left behind in the dust, sticking to my belief that, like, you know, oh, the market's going to keep on going down, I should stay out. I need to formulate some sort of plan or idea to execute so that I can capture some of the premiums going back up. And that's just what my main focus of these days is looking at the market, seeing what price points I want to get in at. But most importantly, trying to not fight the trend. I'm trying my best not to catch the knife. I'm trying to make sure that if I do go in, I go in with a very strong uptrend thesis, not something where, oh, you know, the stock is getting so cheap, I should get in now. I'm trying to avoid that type of mentality, or, oh, you know, it's going to bounce tomorrow, it's going to bounce next week, so I'm going to get in now. Trying not to play bounces, but rather trying to play uptrends. So, you know, maybe I could be wrong on an uptrend. Maybe, you know, I just get in after a few green days, I finally get in, it starts going down, maybe down below the previous support, and I was just wrong. I'd rather make that decision and be wrong rather than trying to hope for a bounce the next day, trying to catch a low, but for it to just go down lower. It would feel really bad, because then, you know, I was trying to catch a knife, I was trying to catch the bounce when I should have just made the trend my friend and traded the uptrend. Easier said than done, for sure. Like, this is not something where I have a scientific formula or this indicator on this graph or this oogla boogla thing that I'm looking for. It's very much a, you know, looking at my portfolio, how much am I down? Can I use this to, I don't know, allocate for a cash secure put comfortably? What's my buying power usage like? Where am I in terms of what if the market goes down another 10% or something? All of these factor into making that final decision of whether or not I open a play on this, you know, in this scary market. But trading in an uptrend gives me just a little bit more direction. So I think ideally I'm waiting for a nice green day. And then there could be a red day after, but I just want to see the trend start going back up, and then I'll make a move then. I think for myself, in this trading environment and where I am in my trading career right now, is I don't want to make bad outcomes or bad results influence my good decisions. I think trading in an uptrend is a really good thing. And I don't even think that's contrarian. I don't think that's very unique. I think a lot of people would agree. I think a lot of people agree that the trend is your friend and you should trade in an uptrend. I would say that there is a lot of ego in wanting to catch a bounce. And I've been checking ego a lot these past, I think, 2 years in terms of trading. And as much as I would love to just be right or correct on a bounce, after learning a little bit more about the buy side of the options world, I really think that it's might be just better to buy long calls if you're trying to play a bounce play. Like, why put a max profit on a bounce if you're hoping for a bounce? So what if it bounces really bigly, you know? But if you're trading in an uptrend, you know, maybe long calls are also okay in that aspect, but that's where cash secure puts actually make, I think, the most amount of sense. That's where the probability of profit really works out in your favor, because the chances of, you know, uptrend breaking all the way back down, you need a pretty big event for that to happen. Otherwise, it might trade slightly down, it might trade flat, it might trade up. I think CSPs in an uptrend are very much okay. But if you're trying to play a bounce, I think writing a CSP on the bounce is kind of crazy. I think they're just being a maximum payout is not that good if it's a bounce play. And that's something that I'm starting to really get a foothold of, because, you know, I've been a fan of, hey, today's a red day, stock looks weak, but I'm down to pick it up at this price. I really do think I just rather wait for an uptrend these days. So we'll see where this idea goes, and I'll report if my thinking changes on this, but that's how I'm thinking right now. So today's episode was going to be dedicated to the idea of adding on to winners, and I feel like I have a lot to say, a lot of good things to say about it, and some of my own experience for that so far, because, you know, everything that I'm talking about in the last episode and this episode and maybe like the next episode after this one is very, very new to me. And I'm like practicing all this. I'm like streaming live at twitch.tv/realthetagang. And, you know, I'm trying to put this all to use. And some of it's working. Like, for example, I have Nike puts that are currently green that I've added onto as it's winning. And it's felt really good as it's like positively reinforcing, a good habit of like, hey, this play is making money. Why can't it make me more money? You know, it sounds cringe, and it sounds like the wrong thing to do, but that is substance, or that is stuff that I will talk about for that episode of adding on to winners. I think a lot of people don't already add to winners, and I think a lot of people right now are actually pretty red. So I wanted to talk more about, I have a note here saying, don't positively reinforce buying red stocks. And I feel like that is very topical for this week. So I'm going to go ahead and do that topic instead, and maybe we'll do adding to winners another time. So with this recent, you know, pretty volatile red market, we start to see a lot of red stocks start to pop up, right? We start to see more stocks on our radars that, you know, are gaining more attention because these stocks are falling at a pretty rapid pace. The author of this book, Tom Hoogard, said that in 2006, there was a stock called Northern Rock that was essentially rallied 50% in a few months. And there was no really any interest in this stock. However, as it began to slide downwards, people started caring more and more about it. The stock is going down and everyone's trading it. As the stock is going down, losing people more and more money, people gaining more and more interest. One of his friends reached out to him and said, hey, Tom, like, should I buy into this company? It's cheap now. I feel like it has a good chance of going up. And I feel like we've been here before, right? We've all had that thought of seeing a stock that has done pretty well maybe before, and it's just gone down so much that you think it's really cheap and it's a stock that is on sale. Tom makes sure that you don't relate stock market to the grocery store, meaning like milk at a grocery store will always be milk. So if you go to another grocery store that sells milk at 50% off, it's just inherently a better deal because milk is still milk at the end of the day. There's no like real big bar for like the quality of milk. You're gonna buy milk from one place just like you would another place, but maybe 50% off at one place is a discount. It's a huge difference. Making that same sort of connection or comparison to the stock market, it doesn't bode really well, because if a stock is doing really bad, it means that the stock is just bad. It doesn't mean that the stock is on sale, right? Like, I get it. Maybe you think that it's fear-driven and you think that people aren't seeing what you're seeing. But maybe on top of that, there is just company fundamentals that are not doing so well. Maybe their revenue is down quarter for quarter, or maybe their net income is going down. Maybe cost of operations going up. Maybe debt is going up. Maybe they're diluting shares, right? Like all these famous companies or famous examples that have the stock at one price going down to less than $5. Like these are companies that you should not be trying to play the turnaround play on. And you might be thinking, But Junie, you might be able to get some massive gains because the stock is so cheap. I could buy so many shares. And if there is a turnaround, I could make a lot of money. And Tom actually addresses that rebuttal as well. He says that, like, if you are fortunate enough to witness a turnaround in the fortunes of the said company, you have trained your mind to think that it's perfectly okay to buy into things that are falling. And that's true. You would be positively reinforcing the idea that buying failing companies is a good thing. Because, hey, this turnaround play worked. You got shares, tons of shares for cheap, and the stock went up. What is there not to like? Why don't I do this again? And that's the fallacy that we're trying to avoid, right? Like, we don't want to make the standard of our plays investing into companies that have to turn around. Like, why not just invest in the other thousands of companies that are already doing well that have a more predictable sort of path to making money? Why are you trying to make it big on a few turnaround plays when there's so many other options to trade? We do have to, and this is a little bit of my opinion here, and, you know, I don't want to just say Tom's opinion the entire time. We have to look at this example in a vacuum. As much as, you know, I'd love to say that this applies to all scenarios, you know, I can hear some people being like, oh, so you're saying that we should never, you know, dollar cost average. We should never buy stocks when they're red. We should never buy, you know, on the way down. What happens if I want to just like buy a few shares of, you know, Google or Microsoft or SPY or QQQ, any of these responsible companies? That's the thing. This example from Tom's book is on a bank called Northern Rock. And there's a very big context clues in here of why this example is so profound. It's because this stock was a stock that no one cared about from the beginning. And then it just went up a lot and then down even more. You know, companies like Google and Meta and Apple are all companies that we know and that we love. At least, you know, a lot of people do. So this isn't like a one-to-one comparison. It would be perfectly fine to spend some of your money to buy stocks like Google and Apple on the way down. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. That is, and even if you wanted to count it as like a discount, I don't even think there's anything wrong with that mode of thinking. However, you know, when you take it to a trading strategy that's not just buying shares every now and then, and you start to apply like very volatile and sort of securities like buying options, buying calls, and buying puts, you need to be just a little bit more, or have a little bit more conviction. And that's going to mean that maybe you don't necessarily bet on this company's downfall or this company's meteoric rise up from just the fact that, you know, this stock has gone down a little bit. Because it's a mainstay. Like, stocks like Apple and Google, I don't see really going anywhere in the next decade. Maybe I learned to bite my words there, but really, I feel like the chances of me being correct there is pretty high. And that's a decision that I'm willing to be wrong on. But that's the thing. This example of, you know, don't buy stocks that you consider cheap is more for stocks that kind of don't deserve the respect that, you know, Apple or Google sort of dictate, right? Like, this is a small bank that inevitably went bankrupt. Google and Apple actually have massive amounts of profits that they make. They have products that people use, and they're gigantic companies. This is an example of a very small company that got a little bit of hype and then more, even more hype as the stock was going down, because and then everyone wanted to get in because it was cheap. There are many stocks in my day that people really loved because it was cheap. I'm thinking about like Plug, you know, back in my day it was trading at $2 or $3. Thinking of JNUG, that was trading at like $5. This is like back in the heyday of like Wall Street Bets in maybe 2017. There were a lot of stocks that had I known or, you know, gotten my experience of like going through the market and then reading this book, I would have never invested a single dollar into any of those plays because it makes so much sense. Like, why invest into something that just looks weak and then hope for a turnaround? Why not just use your money and invest in things that look and feel strong? And just to sort of make an example out of today's lesson is, I think Chegg is a really good example of a company that requires a very big turnaround. Chegg, I think everyone that's listening to this podcast remembers what that company is. It's a company where, or it's a website you basically go to rent textbooks, but you can also find essentially study guides or answers to tests on there that students will upload. And it came in clutch during college time, but ChatGPT really ate its lunch. Like there's really very little reason I see to get Chegg as even a study aid, because I'm seeing popular opinions on Reddit where maybe ChatGPT doesn't give you the answers that you need for like really big equations, but you can always break down the question and ask it simpler questions. And ChatGPT being free, Chegg desperately needs to make money to be able to turn this company around. Chegg right now is considered a penny stock. Chegg is now at $3.26. And I can just tell, I mean, there's increasing volume. And of course, that's because people are trying to exit. But it also means that people are just more interested. In order to sell, there needs to be a buyer. And as you know, Chegg is going down into this like penny stock range, there's just more hype around it. And instead of investing into Chegg, hoping for a turnaround, hoping that Chegg beats ChatGPT, literally the thing where you take a picture of your math equation and it solves it for you, instead of betting on that, maybe you could put the money to something else. Sure, you could be correct about Chegg turning around. Maybe Chegg forms a partnership with ChatGPT. Maybe ChatGPT acquires Chegg for its data to run its models on, whatever have you. But you'd be, again, reinforcing the idea that buying stocks for cheap like this as a sole reason to get in is a good idea. Or maybe like a company turnaround is your thesis. And while that might be a good payoff, the chances of it are pretty low, right? Like you're definitely shooting for the moon here when you could be putting your money to a play that's more reliable. On the other side of the equation of where this might not be applicable might be bigger, more respectable blue chip stocks like Apple that are down with the rest of the market. Some people might say, oh man, you know, Apple's been going down a good bit. I might just buy a little bit because, you know, it's a stock that I like. I want to invest more into it and I'll buy a few shares here. That's perfectly okay, right? Like buying into weakness in a small amount that's comfortable, that doesn't result in you losing a lot of money or it's a very volatile play, that will always be an okay thing to do, especially if you do it on a regular interval and it's truly a dollar cost averaging strategy where maybe every week you have some sort of auto trigger or auto setting that buys one share every like Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific time or something. That will, over time, work itself out, right? You're on a regular interval. You're investing in a company that really isn't going to be going anywhere anytime soon. But putting that same amount of money into a stock that needs a turnaround to stay afloat, that money could evaporate, right? That company could be bankrupt. It could be taken off the exchange and only traded in OTC. Like all this stuff that can happen in the event that, you know, this turnaround play doesn't work. So I don't want people to say like, oh, Junie thinks that buying on the way down is bad, because it isn't. For a lot of people, that's a great strategy. You know, if it keeps you interested in the market, looking on red days and thinking that like, oh, look, everything's on sale. If that's how you want to visualize these, you know, very safe, responsible plays, that's great. But when you use that same rationale for like a company that's not so deserving of that respect, you know, maybe they have a lot to prove still with a company turnaround, then I think things get a little bit dicey. And that's about it for today. Yeah, I thought this was a pretty good lesson. You know, I think as people lose money in the market and have a smaller account balance, they naturally gravitate towards stocks that are cheaper. And that could maybe tunnel vision you into looking for stocks that are the cheapest. And cheapest doesn't necessarily mean the best in terms of, well, really anything in life. Like just, it's cheap for a reason. So just do your extra due diligence in making sure that you understand that if you buy a stock that's very, very cheap, maybe it needs to turn around. Maybe it needs to prove a lot, or maybe it's just a really bad play. You know, like how many times have you gone to maybe buy something really nice for yourself and you ask like, oh, why is this one so much cheaper than this one? Sometimes the deal is good, sometimes not, but stocks don't work like that. Stocks are very much a agreement between the buyer and seller on what the value of the company is at that particular given time. And the value, it is what it is. That's it. Like, people are scared about it. People are going to drop the price down. People are really bullish on it. People are going to drive the price up. There's no such thing as a sale. The price is always what it deserves in terms of the public eye, right? Like, you might think another thing, or you might have a different perspective on what the price should be, but that doesn't mean anything. The price is always dictated by the market, or AKA the rest of everybody else. So the price is always technically fair. So with that, just be careful when looking at smaller companies, or companies that need to turn around, or companies that need to prove themselves when they're cheap, because they might not be cheap. They might just be fairly valued. From what just started out as just an idea, then learning how to trade options, then building a logging platform, then partnering with TasyTrade is so surreal to me. If you'd like to trade on TasyTrade, you can see the show description from my referral link, or use ThetaGain referral code, one word, all caps, when signing up to help me and support the website, podcast, and stream. This podcast, the website, and stream are all made possible because of my patrons at patreon.com/ThetaGain. Signing up helps keep the services up and alive, as well as pay my own personal bills. I do the podcast, website, and stream full-time as my primary source of income. I feel grateful to be able to do this full-time and focus on providing the best service possible for free. The podcast, website, and stream are all free, and it'll stay that way. Signing up for Patreon gives you a few perks, though, so check it out again at patreon.com/ThetaGain if you're interested in helping support. And before getting into today's episode, I want to give a huge shout out to Ben Adushi, Kaput, Grandpound 95, Slow Motion, Maltman 1856, Chicken Dinner, Lord Skeletor, Ensis 88, The Jester, Ajitar Heel, Young Rich, Rustier, Pig Trader, Fancy Wolf, Major, EDC, Avrillian, Statistically Random, Bachatetho, Mr. Integrity, Steve Katzy, Asha Kabat, McFly, Y-Teen, Mods, KJ Martin, Arfman, Kick Make Money, RRL, Tecomi Elmo, Maestro XC, Nala, Gruffalo, Clutch, Upstream Puddle, Meh, Espresso Bean, Rooster, Jayford LOL, Sumatrix, Bearded Savage, Andy V, Kevlar 22, Dang High, Los Pepes, Danube 9000, JPrix 86, Turbo Ricky, Louis BG, Desserts, Vegeta Plank, Alexander Kerm, Husk P, Travella, RS Schmitty, LPL, Tyler, LM 97, Troop 947, Loido, Theta Collector, T-Wall 3252, Danger 10, Joe Quirt, Spicy Lemons, Bustin, Justin, Big Dillo, SWH, J Spammy Spam, MX7, and Suede Slides. You probably noticed, if you listened to the podcast for a while, that I read the patron names in a completely new order, and I don't know why I've never done this before, but I've never really sorted the patron list by the date of which they joined ThetaGain.com. So that's a little bit of insight. If you're listening to this part of the section, you get to know actually who signed up before you, before your name is called, if you are a patron and if you are listening. Ben Adushi is actually the very first person that signed up on ThetaGain.com. Was a long time before deciding to join Patreon, but wow, dude, Ben Adushi actually joined in 2019. I legit thought I was actually the only 2019 account in the Discord, but there's actually one other person. That's Kaput. Ben Adushi and Kaput both joined in 2019. This website looked so bad in 2019, and I mean, for good reason. I was like doing other things. Like, I was like focusing on trading and, you know, trying to stay alive with my 80K assignment and being active on Twitter, you know, getting all the code push changes of everything I needed to refactor to have accounts be enabled at that time. It was a messy time for the website, but seeing that people were on so early, I mean, there are some core people. Slow-mo, you're number four. You joined 2020. Yeah. You joined on Valentine's Day of 2020. 2/14/2020. That's so sick. Maltman after that. Chicken Dinner soon after that. There's just lots of people that honestly are still patrons that have just been with me for a very long time. And yeah, I mean, thinking that, wow, dude, it's been like 4 years, soon to be almost 5 years for a lot of the core people. And it's like, dude, we've traded together for like half a decade, you know? That's nuts. That's awesome. Feels good. I mean, the Discord and just the community that that I'm trading with, a lot of it just depends on the people that are there and that continue to join, and you know, trying to maintain that culture of, you know, being transparent, always learning. You know, being kind is a huge thing. Like, I don't want to associate with people that are mean, that are like know-it-alls, right? Like, who got time for that? We got enough of that work. So, you know, just trading with nice and kind people is top priority. And, you know, obviously we all want to make money, but that's an expectation. You know, no one joins the market hoping to lose money. But yeah, this week for me personally, I feel very, very good in terms of my trading performance, because now that I'm beating QQQ and SPY, I feel like now I can confidently say that I'm beating the market. Whereas before, you know, I wasn't beating QQQ, and it did feel bad knowing that had I just held on to QQQ shares, I would have been doing better, because I do a lot of trading to be able to perform the way that I do. And if I could just buy QQQ and just let it sit there and have it be the same, then I'd probably do that. It's kind of boring, but I mean, if it proves to be better and it's a lot less risky, you know, for the most part, if you're just dollar cost averaging, then it doesn't seem that bad. But now that I'm beating the market, I'm beating SPY by about 2%, and I'm beating QQQ by like tenths of a percent, like 0.05% right now. As of right now, the market is still shifting, still going down, still going up. I feel good. So I will say that I am beating the market again. And I feel like I'm just armed with so much more knowledge from this book that I've been sharing on the last podcast episode and this one, that I feel like I could really put that to work. I just don't know, of course, what exactly that time of strike will be for me, because like I mentioned, I'm waiting kind of for this uptrend to start forming. Right now, it definitely feels like if you're selling puts, you're definitely, you know, you're signing up to catch the knife. And whereas before, I think I was down to do it. I think now these days, I'm less likely to write a put on a really big red day, because I don't need to take the risk of it going down much further. And if I wanted to catch a bounce and sell a put on a very red day, I might as well just buy a long call and just watch it more closely, you know? And that's where my head's at right now. And that's like a total flip of what I've always thought up until maybe a month ago. So I'm very much still learning. And trading is really fun for me right now. That's another little anecdotal opinion from me, or just an opinion from me. I feel like right now trading is more fun than it has been in like since 2021, right? Like I feel like 2022 was really scary, so that was like, yeah, it was okay. 2023, it was a great year, but honestly, it was pretty boring. It was like the market went up, we all made money, whatever. This year, after learning a few more strategies on the upside and downside, I really feel like my mind is more engaged, and I feel like, honestly, also, it has to do with me taking this full-time as well. Doing this full-time is awesome. I think it's really fun. And just the streaming schedule that I have with, I get to say good morning to people that care about what I have to say, instead of being in a stand-up meeting saying no blockers, no updates, no blockers, you know? Like, I feel like my my level, my baseline of happiness has just gone up, despite making a lot less money. But you know, hopefully things change later down the road when it matters just a little bit more. But right now I'm focused on me. I feel like things are going pretty well. And yeah, today is Friday. The wind has a little breeze. It's very sunny outside. What's the temperature? It's 88. It's 88. I mean, look, the market closes in 29 minutes. It looks to me, honestly, the market is rallying just a bit into today's close. Again, today's July 19th. It's a Friday. I'm excited to see where we open on Monday. Maybe we finally see like a very strong green open. But, you know, we have AMD earnings soon. Oh, man, it'd be really tough for me to want to open a position before AMD earnings just because I'm down on a lot of cash secure puts right now that if, you know, they reported well and the market went up, I would just recoup a lot of my losses, my unrealized losses, and I might end up green on some of these. But I feel like there's really no need to put in more to bet on this bounce. But that's a mental battle for next week. Hopefully you guys enjoyed today's episode. Thanks for listening this far. It always means a lot to me. And yeah, talk to you guys later. Bye.